This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of Cole and Sav, Our Surprising Love Story by Cole and Savannah LeBrant, published by Thomas Nelson and read by the authors. Please note that you may download an accompanying PDF that provides enhanced materials for this audiobook. To download the PDF, please visit info.thomasnelson.com/p/ColeSavPDF. Chapter 1. Surprise at the Grove. I feel like I just said goodbye to my own daughter. I told my friend John Stephen the first time I met Savannah and Everly. It was the strangest feeling. I had no idea where it came from. This certainly wasn't what I expected to find when John Stephen and I headed out that morning in search of the perfect motor scooter to ride around the campus of Troy University back home in Alabama. I hadn't really thought about how I was going to get the scooter home when we flew back to Alabama in 5 days. But hey, I was 19, and questions like how to get a motor scooter from Los Angeles to Troy, Alabama, by way of the Atlanta airport, didn't really concern me. I just knew I wanted one, and I'd found the perfect one online at a warehouse about half an hour from where we were staying. I convinced John Stephen to get up early and go with me. We found the warehouse, but it turned out it didn't have the exact one I wanted, so I decided to pass. Now we found ourselves 30 minutes out of our way. I say minutes and not miles because in our few weeks out in Los Angeles, we learned that everything is measured in time. Miles don't matter because traffic is so bad everywhere you go that it takes forever just to get anywhere, especially at the wrong time of day. That's why we decided to try to find something fun to do where we were rather than drive all the way back over to where we were staying. We had less than a week left in California after our month-long bros trip, and we wanted to make the most of it. My oldest brother, Luke, had flown out with us right after all of us finished up our classes at our respective colleges that spring to spend a month bumming around Southern California. We didn't have any kind of plan except to go exploring, hang out at the beach, and maybe meet girls. The last part was mainly Luke and me since John Stephen already had a serious girlfriend he ended up marrying. I also tried acting while we were there. I had some television experience from being on The Amazing Race, and I wanted to see if acting might be something I'd like. It wasn't. In fact, I hated it. All it did was waste some of our already little time in California, so I didn't want to waste any more. Then Luke had to fly home a week early, which made the end of our adventure feel that much closer. When the motor scooter place turned out to be a bus, I started Googling fun things to do close to where we were. The number one thing to pop up on my phone was an outdoor mall called The Grove. I'd heard some people talk about how cool it was, and now we were only a mile and a half away. I told John Stephen we should go check it out, and he agreed. We drove over there and started walking around the shops. The Grove was huge. All these great stores wound around parks and fountains, plus the mall had a theater and all kinds of places to eat. We could spend a week there and not get bored. I could see why it was number one on the Google list. John Stephen and I started wandering around, taking everything in, when I happened to see this super beautiful blonde girl across the mall from us. Now, I am no ladies' man. I never had a girlfriend. And I was the last guy on earth any of my friends thought of as smooth with the ladies. But I was also a 19-year-old single guy, and any time I saw a beautiful, blonde California girl, that was a pretty good day. I looked a little closer at the girl, and she looked familiar. Living in a small town in South Alabama, I never ran into famous people, either from movies or television or social media, but this was Southern California, not South Alabama. I started trying to figure out where I knew this girl from. Then it hit me. I said, "Hey, John Stephen, I think that's the girl from Musical.ly." Musical.ly is a social media platform where I'd recently started posting videos. "If you see a little girl with her, then it's definitely her," I said. "Is that the girl?" John Stephen asked as a little girl who looked to be around 3 ran past. "Totally," I said. "That's Everly, which means that has to be Savannah Sudis." I sent her a direct message a couple weeks before we came out here. I thought maybe we could tag each other in our video posts to help each other get more followers, but I never heard back from her. "So what do you want to do?" John Stephen asked. "What do you mean?" I said. "Should we go up and say hi?" "I don't know. Should we?" "I think so." "Nah, feels kind of weird since she never messaged me back. Besides, she has a kid. She has to be married. If that was my wife, I wouldn't want a couple of goofs like us to go up and start bugging her, I said. You're probably right. John Steven agreed. You know, let's leave her alone, I said. We then took off to another part of the grove. John Steven wanted to buy something for his girlfriend. Eventually, we ended up at Barnes & Noble. Maybe 45 minutes later, the two of us walked out of the Barnes & Noble and literally ran into a woman walking by. As we were apologizing, her eyes widened as she said, Hey, my name is Chantel. My sister, Savannah, saw you guys a little bit ago, and she told me that if I happened to see you, to tell you to come over and meet her. She's over that way with a friend and their daughters, Chantel said. I'd take you over to her, but I'm on my way out of here. Okay, thanks. We will definitely head over that way, I replied. As soon as she walked away, I looked over at John Steven, shook my head and said, This is gonna be awkward. You think? He said. Oh man, how can it not be? I kind of wish we hadn't run into her sister, I said. But we have to go over and meet her now. Her sister will tell her she ran into us, and if we don't go meet her, it will be rude. I shrugged. I guess you're right, I said. And the two of us headed over toward where we first spotted Savannah. We'd found her pretty easily. She hadn't moved since we first saw her. I walked over and said something like, Hi, I'm Cole. I hope this isn't weird, but we ran into your sister, and she said we should come over here and meet you. I wanted to tell you that you have a really cute daughter, and I love the videos the two of you make together. Savannah smiled and said, Aw, thank you. Before she could introduce herself, her daughter came bouncing up and said, Hi, I'm Everly. I have to be honest. I was much more comfortable meeting Everly than I was meeting Savannah. I am the second oldest of six children. I have a little sister, Lily, who was 6 years old at the time. Since Everly looked to be a little younger than my sister, I immediately went into big brother mode. Hey, Everly, you're so cute, I said, or something like that. Savannah also introduced me to her friend Michelle and Ava, Michelle's daughter. Everly and Ava were your typical super energetic preschoolers. The two of them started jumping on John Steven and me, wanting to play, so, like the big brothers we were, we chased them around this grassy area. Eventually, the girls stopped jumping on us and started playing together. When they did, John Steven and I went over to talk to Savannah and Michelle a little more. All we really had to talk about was the fact that we both made videos on social media. Then I remembered VidCon was coming up that weekend. VidCon is like Comic-Con, but for vloggers and other social media people. So, are you going to VidCon this weekend? I asked. I thought about it, but I don't really know anybody who's going to be there, so I'll probably pass, Savannah said. Me too, Michelle said. We're from Alabama, so we don't know anyone else either. But if you want to go, maybe we can meet up there and hang out? I mean, you don't really know us, but at least you won't be completely by yourself, I said. I was not asking Savannah on a date. I assumed she was married. Savannah surprised me and said, Yeah, that would be cool. Great, I said. Here's our numbers. Text us in just a few days if you decide you really want to go. I gave my number to Michelle, not knowing if we'd hear anything back from them. Once we finished talking about VidCon, we pretty much ran out of things to talk about. John Steven and I needed to get going anyway. So I told them, Well, we gotta take off. It was great meeting you. Yeah, you too, Savannah said. John Steven and I turned and started walking away when Savannah called over to her daughter. Everly, go give Cole a hug goodbye. Everly dropped whatever she was doing and took off after us. I turned around and saw this cute little 3-year-old with boundless energy running toward me with her arms wide open, like a scene in a movie. When she got to me, she jumped in my arms, smiling wide. I picked her up and spun her around in the air, which made her laugh even more. I gave her a hug goodbye, then sat her back on the ground. Goodbye, Cole, she called to me as she ran back to her mother. Bye, Everly, I said. John Steven and I turned and walked away. And that should have been the end of the story. But then the strangest feeling I'd ever have in my life came over me. That's when I turned to John Steven and said, I feel like I just said goodbye to my own daughter. Why I'd feel that or say that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. I was 19 years old and about to start my sophomore year of college. I just met Savannah, and I had no reason to feel anything toward her or Everly, and yet I couldn't shake that feeling. Little did I know that the feeling that had come over me was a seed God planted to prepare me for the biggest surprise of my life.
Chapter 2. But he's so young. I don't know what made me send my sister, Chantel, off to find Cole. It wasn't like me to chase down guys. I was surprised even to see Cole when I spotted him at the Grove. My sister just happened to be in town visiting. On a whim, she and my best friend Michelle and I decided to go hang out at the Grove for the afternoon with our girls. Michelle's little girl, Ava, and Everly were both 3 at the time and baby besties. We'd been at the Grove for a while when we decided to stop for ice cream. That's when I glanced over to my right and saw these 2 guys staring over at us like maybe we looked familiar. I recognized Cole right off. I turned to Michelle and my sister and said, "That's him. That's the guy from the video we were watching the other day." "What?" Chantel said. "I thought he lived back east somewhere. What's he doing here?" I told her I didn't know, and then Everly did something and I had to go into mom mode to take care of her. By the time I turned back around toward where I'd seen Cole, he and his friend were gone. I was pretty sure they didn't know I had seen them. "Oh man, I thought they were going to come over and say hi," I said. He DM'd me, and after I replied, I never heard back from him. I wanted to meet him. That might have been the end of it, except about a half hour later, Chantel said she needed to leave. I hugged her goodbye, then I just sort of blurted out, "Hey, if you see Cole and his friend on the way out, let them know they should come over and say hi." I really don't know why I said that to her, except I thought Cole's videos were hilarious and I wanted to meet someone else on Musical.ly. I really didn't know many other people who did what I was doing, so when I had a chance to meet one, I wanted to do it. "Okay, I will," Chantel said as she left. I hoped she'd run into Cole and his friend, but I didn't really expect her to. The Grove is huge and thousands of people go there every day. The odds of her running into Cole and his friend, if they were even still there, were almost impossible. That's why I was pleasantly surprised a little while later when the 2 of them came walking over toward me. Cole seemed nervous when he introduced himself. He also seemed really, really young. At the time, I was a grown-up woman of 23. He looked like he was still a teenager, which later I learned he was. I introduced myself and told him I was glad to meet him. Everly didn't wait to be asked to introduce herself. She came right up and said, "Hi, I'm Everly," and gave Cole a big hug. She was always super friendly with my guy friends. I think maybe it was because her father wasn't around too much. Before Cole and I could have a real conversation, Everly pulled him away and made Cole start playing with her. Cole looked over at me, smiled, shrugged, and said something like, "Well, looks like someone needs me." Watching the 2 of them play together was so cute. Cole seemed completely at ease with her, like he had a daughter of his own or maybe a little sister. Given how young he was, I figured it had to be the latter. Ava also grabbed Cole's friend, who had introduced himself as John Steven, and had him play with her. The 4 of them ran around acting all crazy in the grassy area where we were hanging out. Everly finally stopped playing with Cole long enough for him to come over and talk to me. I asked him how long they were going to be in town, and Cole told me they were leaving on Monday, right after VidCon that weekend. When he mentioned VidCon, I said something about maybe going, except I didn't know anyone who was going to be there. Cole said he didn't either, so we talked about going together. If you asked me right then if I was for sure going to VidCon with him, I'd have told you, maybe. He seemed really nice, but we had just met. I didn't know if I wanted to spend a day or 2 or 3 at VidCon with someone I'd just met. But he seemed like a lot of fun, and Ev had hit it off with him right away, so I thought maybe I'd go. Cole gave his number to Michelle so we could contact them later if we decided to go with them. Cole then said something like, "Well, hey, we gotta go. I said goodbye and it was nice to meet you," or something like that. And Cole and John Steven started walking away. He'd been so sweet to Ev, and I didn't want her to miss saying goodbye. So I called her over from playing with Ava and said, "Ev, go tell Cole goodbye." She took off running after him and gave him a huge hug. Cole picked her up and swung her around in the air, which made her laugh and made me happy. I love to see my daughter smiling and laughing. He then set her on the ground and she came running back to me. When I think back to that first meeting, I am blown away by how random it was, and yet it wasn't random at all. Cole told me later that he had recognized me because of Everly. He thought I looked like the girl from the Musical.ly videos, but he wasn't sure until he saw Ev. If he hadn't stopped and looked closer to see if Ev was with me, then I might never have seen him at all. And if I hadn't seen him, then I wouldn't have talked about his videos that I'd watched with my sister. And I wouldn't have told Chantel to tell him to come over and say hi if she saw him. And none of this would have happened if I hadn't started doing social media. It only seems right that seeing Everly was what let Cole know I was the Musical.ly girl, because if it wasn't for Ev, I never would have started posting 15-second videos there. For me, the whole social media thing started as a way of sharing pictures of my baby with friends. Both Michelle and I were young moms, and our girls, Ava and Ev, were almost the exact same age. When they were around 8 months old, Michelle and I started dressing them in cute matching outfits and posting pictures of them on an Instagram page we made just for them. We never expected the page to blow up, but it grew enough that we started getting free clothes for our girls to wear in the pictures. In the Instagram world, if you upload nice, clean pictures and if you have a good amount of followers, stores and others will send you outfits to wear in your pictures. It's basically free advertising for them. But I was happy to do it because baby clothes are expensive, and at the time I was a 19-year-old single mom and college student. The page might have stayed that way, just a way to get some cute clothes from the local stores and show off pictures to our friends, if not for BuzzFeed. One day BuzzFeed featured the Everly and Ava page on their website, and our Instagram page went crazy. The girls' page gained 200,000 new followers in just a couple of days, and didn't stop growing until they had more than 1 million followers. Soon after, Everly, who by this time was 2.5 years old, started modeling for Kardashian Kids and some other big brands. When Everly and Ava's Instagram page took off, so did mine. Michelle and I posted pictures of ourselves doing mommy stuff with our girls. With the success of my own page, I discovered a world I didn't know existed, the business side of social media. I'd done social media forever through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, just like everyone my age. However, I learned there is a big difference between posting pictures for friends and having it turn into a way to make some extra money. Right around that time, I posted my first video with Ev on an app called Musical.ly. We did a fun lip sync to a Justin Bieber song. Ev was a natural at it, and her cute 3-year-old personality just lit up the screen. I mean, come on, who can resist a 3-year-old dancing and singing to Justin Bieber? Just for fun, we did a few more videos, and I posted them but didn't check back on the app for at least a week. When I logged back on, I found we had 50,000 followers. Someone connected to Musical.ly must have noticed because they featured one of our videos on the app itself, which introduced our videos to a ton of people who, otherwise, might never have found us. I thought, well, that's cool, and didn't think much more about it. That shows how little I knew about social media. Before I knew it, our followers numbered in the millions. I couldn't believe it. It's not like we did anything special to try to gain a bunch of followers. It just happened. The more our Musical.ly page grew, the more our Instagram pages blew up. We started getting some actual cash from the two, which was great. Between being a mom and going to college full-time, I did not have a lot of time left over for a real job. Social media provided a way for me to make money without taking time away from what was most important to me. It also led to Cole sending me the direct message that I had answered, but he never saw my reply. Him sending that direct message led to our random meeting at the Grove, when he just happened to be in California and just happened to be at the Grove the same time as Ev and me, and he just happened to see me and notice that I'd seen him. Then my sister just happened to run into him a short time later and asked him to go find me and say hi. I still can't tell you why I asked her to do that, except something inside me just made me blurt it out. Now I know that something was God. This random meeting wasn't random to him. When I got home after meeting Cole at the Grove, I started checking out his social media feeds. I knew he made videos on Musical.ly, but until that night, I never watched his earlier Vine videos. Vine was a really popular video platform, but it went under about a year before I met Cole. Watching his videos there made me fall over laughing. He was hilarious. I loved his sense of humor and creativity. I also discovered he had been on The Amazing Race with his mom. How many guys his age would do an around-the-world race with their mothers? He didn't seem like any other guy I'd met. Before I went to bed, I went on his Snapchat feed, where I found a video he had just posted about meeting me and Everly. He went on and on about how cute Everly and Ava were and what great kids they were. Hearing that helped me relax. He seemed like a good guy. I could see myself going to VidCon with him. I texted Michelle, who had their numbers, and asked her to text the numbers to me so we could arrange our meetup on Friday. I sort of wanted to see him again before I totally committed to spending a couple of days with him and his friend, but I wasn't sure how to make that happen. I wasn't looking for a new boyfriend, even though I constantly asked God to someday bring that perfect guy into my life. I was simply praying and trusting that someday he might answer my prayers. Chapter 3, A Girl with the Past. To be honest, when I first met Cole at the Grove, I didn't see him as anything more than a possible friend who might make VidCon less awkward to attend. I was a 23-year-old single mom living in Southern California. He was a 19-year-old kid visiting Los Angeles from Alabama. I certainly didn't have any kind of romantic thoughts about him. Don't get me wrong. I thought he was really cute, but more in an, aw, he's so cute kind of way, not in a potential boyfriend kind of way. I already had an on-again, off-again boyfriend in Ev's dad, who at the time was more off-again than on-again. I never had much luck with guys before I met Cole. My family moved from San Jose to SoCal right before my freshman year. I started high school and didn't know anyone. Then I met a guy who seemed to be terrific. We dated all through high school, and I thought we had a future together, until I found out that he was cheating on me. I really loved him and had given him the one thing I could never get back. My virginity. When he cheated on me, my world came crashing down. The news hit me extra hard because a few years earlier, my dad had cheated on my mom, basically ending their 27-year marriage. My parents splitting up completely blindsided me. When I was a little girl, my dad was absolutely the best dad any girl could ever hope for. I was such a daddy's girl. Though I loved both of my parents very much, he was my favorite. My mom knew it, but she seemed okay with it. The two of them had a really amazing relationship. He and I did too. Every morning before he took me to school, he went to Starbucks and bought hot chocolate for my sister and me. He also always made sure the car was nice and warm inside before we got in for the early drive to school. After school, my sister and I had dance classes every day. My dad sold insurance, so we bought the building next door to the dance studio and had his office there. He did it so he could be close to us and drop over and watch us dance every day. That meant so much to me. He was really good about doing little things like that. He also made big gestures as well. I remember him taking my sister and me shopping. Once, we went to the mall and he handed each of us a $100 bill to shop with. He wasn't trying to buy our love. I think he wanted us to learn how to handle money. Whatever his reason, I never forgot that day. We had such a great time together. Things started to change when I was in middle school, but I didn't think much of it at the time. We moved from San Jose down to Ladera Ranch, California. We moved, but not all of us. At least not all of the time. My dad lived in San Jose during the week and came down and stayed with us every other weekend. My mom told me that he had to stay up there for work. I didn't have any reason not to believe her. Maybe if I'd paid a little closer attention, I might have had some doubts. Before we moved, my parents had been fighting a little more than normal. I didn't read too much into it since they'd been married so long. After we moved and my dad came down to stay with us on weekends, I usually found him sleeping on the couch instead of with my mom. Again, this should have been a huge red flag to me, but I knew my dad liked to stay up late watching television. I figured he'd fallen asleep there and didn't wake up until morning. Eventually, my dad's every other weekend visits turned into once a month visits. Then once every couple of months until he hardly came to see us at all. I just assumed he was going through a busy season at work. But then one day, the doorbell rang. My mom opened the door and a neighbor we didn't know very well was standing there. She told my mom someone had called her house with a message for my mom. Then she said that the woman on the phone told her to tell my mom that she was so sorry. As soon as the neighbor said that, my mom burst out crying. The neighbor apologized and left. After closing the door, my mom backed up a little and collapsed onto the stairs. I sat down next to her and put my arm around her. I tried to comfort her, but I was confused. Why would some woman calling a neighbor to say she was sorry make my mom fall apart? It didn't make any sense to me. Even though I didn't know what was going on, I told my mom all those things you say to people when you want them to feel better. "It's okay, Mom. Everything is going to be all right," I said. "You don't understand, Savannah," she said. She tried to say something else, but she couldn't hold herself together long enough to get the words out. Instead, she buried her face in my arms and cried her eyes out. Finally, she sat up and gathered herself enough to say, "The woman who called our neighbor is not just any woman. She's the woman your dad's been having an affair with over the past couple of years." Before that afternoon, I had thought I had a great Christian family. When we lived together, we went to church together nearly every Sunday. My dad had seemed like such a godly man. He was best friends with our pastor. Now all of that, my whole childhood really, felt like a lie. However, my parents splitting up didn't immediately devastate me. I was more confused than angry. My dad and I had always been so close that it was hard for me to think that he was some kind of bad guy. Our relationship changed, however. We didn't see each other very often, but I was so busy with high school and friends and everything else that I didn't think too much about it. And I'd met this great guy, someone I really loved and had given myself to. So when I found out this great guy was cheating on me, I felt doubly betrayed. I think that's when I really felt the pain of my parents' divorce. Soon after, I met a guy named Tommy through some of my high school friends. He became my rebound boyfriend. Tommy was really the wrong guy at the wrong time. After my Christian boyfriend cheated on me, I started to give up on guys and God. As I said before, having him cheat on me made me see my parents' divorce in a whole new light. I better understood how hurt my mom was, and I could not understand how my dad could do that to her. Now, don't get me wrong, I love my father, and our relationship is better today than it has been in a long time. I'm just telling you how I felt when I met Tommy. My dad had always been a godly man in my eyes, and I had this Christian boyfriend, and yet both of them hurt and disappointed me. That made me think, why bother? What's the point? While I wasn't a perfect angel in high school, I was definitely a good kid compared to a lot of my friends. Even after my parents split, I kept going to church, maybe not as regularly as before, but I still went. I considered myself a Christian because I'd had a conversion experience when I was younger. By the time I met Tommy, I hardly ever went to church anymore. I also started drinking and partying, things I had never done. In the beginning, Tommy seemed like the sweetest guy ever. He made me feel so special. 2 months after we started dating, we slept together for the first time. I was 19. To be honest, the decision to have sex with him wasn't a big deal since I'd already lost my virginity to my high school boyfriend. Pretty much the next day, my super sweet boyfriend changed completely. It was like he got what he wanted, so we stopped trying, except when he wanted more. We dated another 2 months after that, but things went downhill fast. We fought a lot until I had finally had enough and broke up with him. We had just broken up when I realized I was late, so I bought a pregnancy test. Tommy came over, and we saw the results together. I was pregnant. The thought of having a baby scared me to death. I didn't know how I'd continue going to college and take care of a baby. And if I didn't finish college, what kind of life could I have? Tommy, however, seemed oddly excited about it. He even talked about us getting married. My parents never would have gone for that because they were not overly fond of Tommy. Telling my parents I was pregnant with his child was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. They were really supportive of me, however, and they loved the idea of becoming grandparents. My pregnancy caused them to start talking, to the point where they wanted to try and make their marriage work. He and my mom decided that they needed to make their marriage work so they both could be there for me and my baby. I was beyond thrilled. I was like, yay, I'm going to have my dad back in my life. He sat down with my brother and sister and me and asked all of us to forgive him and give him a second chance. Of course I was willing to do that. My fears about being pregnant went away. It didn't last. 2 weeks later, my dad went back to the woman for whom he left my mom. I didn't speak to him for months, not until after Everly was born. My disappointments were just beginning. Around my 6 month of pregnancy, I learned Tommy, who had been eager to get married when he found out I was pregnant, was now cheating on me. I was done, I thought. I dumped him, but we got back together when Everly was born. He promised me he'd changed, and I let myself believe him because I felt like I had to do everything I could to try to make a relationship with Tommy work for our daughter's sake. He hadn't changed. Within a matter of weeks after Everly was born, Tommy left me, again. I felt horrible about myself. It wasn't the last time. Tommy came back around whenever something big with Everly happened, like Christmas or a birthday. A lot of times I asked him to come back because I felt like our daughter needed her dad to be there. He came, and both of us were so focused on Everly that we didn't argue, and we had what felt like happy family times. Happy family days triggered the two of us talking about getting back together. He'd swear everything was going to be different this time. "Just give me another chance," he'd say, and I always caved. We always got along great as long as Everly was with us. However, whenever she was with my mom or asleep, the argument started, the same old arguments we always had. Words flew. I was left feeling ugly and worse than worthless, like no one else would ever want to be with me because I had a kid. I could not live with that, so Tommy and I would split up again. After every breakup, when Ev was asleep, I'd break down in tears before God, begging him to bring me a guy who'd love and respect me and love Everly like his own. That guy never showed up, or maybe I just never gave him a chance. I once dated a good Christian guy in college during one of the times Tommy and I had broken up. He treated me with respect and was the kind of guy I should have dated, but then Tommy came back around asking for another chance, and I gave it to him. Just like that, I broke up with the good guy to go back to the bad boy. Yes, Tommy had cheated on me, but strangely enough, that was part of the appeal. When Tommy stared at other girls, even when we were together, that gave me a challenge to make him have eyes only for me. If he'd been all about me, then there was no chase. Writing it now, this sounds sick to me, and it was. I describe it as having a disease that I had accepted as my lot in life. Tommy didn't just cheat on me. He drank a lot, but then again, I drank and partied when we first started dating. Then things changed in a way that made me really uncomfortable. And I decided I couldn't be around that, and for sure I didn't want my baby around it. But then he'd show up and swear to me that he was done with all of that, and that he'd changed and everything was going to be different. And I'd believe him, only to get hurt again, and again, and again. My family begged me to give up on Tommy, which only made me mad at them and more determined to change him. "You deserve better than this, Sav," my mom and sister told me over and over. I told them that they didn't understand. But they did. I was the one who didn't want to admit the truth to myself. Living this way changed me. I wasn't a happy person. I acted happy in the videos Everly and I made on Musical.ly, but overall there wasn't a lot of joy in my life. My family saw how miserable I was. My mom told me she was always praying for me to leave him and had her friends praying as well. I know she was also asking God to send a decent, godly guy into my life. I never imagined Cole might be the answer to that prayer when I sent my sister off to find him. When Cole walked away from the first meeting, I didn't know I'd met the man of my dreams, but there was something about him that made me want to see him again. He was too young for me, and he lived on the other side of the country, so having any kind of relationship with him was out of the question. Still, I found I was intrigued by him, even though I really didn't know anything about him. There was just something about him that drew me. I decided to go with it and see where it might lead.
Chapter 4. A Sign from Heaven. Shortly after meeting Savannah and Everly at the Grove, John Stephen and I headed over to the beach at Santa Monica. We'd gone to most of the beaches in Southern California in the 3 weeks or so we'd been in Los Angeles. It's one of my favorite things to do. When we got to the beach at Santa Monica, we found it had all kinds of exercise equipment, like pull-up bars and rope climbs. I did a short workout with John Stephen, but he wanted to keep working out, and I really wanted to go down closer to the water. So I told him I'd meet him back there in a half hour or so. The sun had just gone down, which made the scene, as I looked out at the water, extra beautiful. Standing there, with the waves crashing against the sand and the stars beginning to come alive, I felt extra close to God. I always do when I see the beauty he's created. I found a spot where I could be alone and sat down on the sand, just trying to take it all in. Looking out at the waves rolling in, I felt incredibly blessed. I started praising God and telling him how good he is. Then I asked him if he had anything for me on this trip, and if so, to please reveal it to me. When we flew out to California for our month-long adventure, I had wondered if maybe acting was for me. I learned it wasn't. Now that my trip was nearly over, I couldn't help but wonder if there was maybe some bigger purpose in God's plan to bring me here. "I'm listening, God," I said. "Please show me." I sat back and looked at the waves and the sea, the stars in the sky. I hoped I might see a shooting star, or an unusually large wave, or maybe a dolphin jumping. Anything that might be a sign from God telling me that he felt as close to me in this moment as I felt to him. I also hoped he might show me what he wanted me to take away from my time in California. I sat there and waited. And waited. A half hour went by, or maybe it was 45 minutes, or maybe even an hour. I don't know how long I sat there, but there was no giant wave, or shooting star, or dancing dolphin, or any sign from God. Finally, I stood up and started walking up the beach to where John Stephen was working out. I had taken a couple steps when my phone beeped. I looked down and saw a text. "Hey, this is Michelle. I wanted you to have my number before we try to meet on Friday for VidCon." "Cool, thanks. Guess I'll see you again Friday," I texted back. Then she replied, "Here's Savannah's number. Text her and work out the details." I looked at the time. It was already 11 o'clock. I did not want to text a married woman with a child this late. I could imagine what her husband might think. "I'll text her tomorrow," I replied. My phone beeped again. "She's up. Text her now," Michelle replied. I didn't know if I should. I found John Stephen and let him read the text. "What do you think I should do? Do you think it's okay if I text her?" "If she's telling you to do it, you should do it," John Stephen replied. "Yeah, I guess," I said. So I did. I'd been out on the beach looking for a sign from God. Was this him sending it to me via text message? Seeking a sign from God and drawing close to him was nothing out of the ordinary for me. God has always been a part of my life. Both of my parents professed to be Christians for most of my growing up years. From as far back as I can remember, they took me and my 5 siblings to church. However, if I'm being honest, I have to admit that I hated going to church. I don't want to offend any of the pastors or the churches where we went, but most of those churches were just plain boring. We sang songs out of a hymn book, and no one really got into them. It seemed like smiling and actually enjoying the experience were against the rules for worshiping God, which made no sense to me. I never had the sense that we were worshiping, even though it was called a worship service. When I looked around, everyone seemed miserable. Still, everyone kept going. That's what you did in a small town in South Alabama. You'd get up on Sundays and go to church. And you'd feel better about yourself because you'd made the effort. It's not that you necessarily had your life changed by Jesus, or that you'd made any kind of radical, life-altering decision. You went because that's what you were supposed to do. Like I said, I hated it. At home, I saw a different kind of Christianity. Through most of my growing up years, my mom and dad were serious about God. The two of them met at a church camp, fell in love, and got married. My mom stayed home with all of us kids, while my dad was a Spanish professor at Troy University. When I was little, my mom taught my Sunday school and vacation Bible school classes. Dad coached my baseball and soccer teams. Both took us to church and lived what they believed. However, my family didn't experience the best kind of church life, and that eventually took its toll. My mom never really fit in at any of the churches we attended. She isn't your typical Southern Alabama Christian mom. By that, I mean, she loves to have a good time. I'm not saying other women where we grew up didn't, but most of them would never in a million years touch an alcoholic beverage or be caught dancing to Despacito on the dance floor. My mom would. She even has a few tattoos, which made her anything but your typical church mom in Alabama. My mom just stood out, but not in a bad way. She was just different. On top of all of this, she was, and is, a very beautiful woman. Most of the other women kept their distance. No one ever invited her over for parties or just to hang out or do anything other than attend a women's Bible study once a week. Because of this, my mom never really experienced community, and that's where Christians are called to thrive. One of the things I love about my mom is she is never fake. What you see is what you get with her. She hates drama, and she had no use for fake Christianity, where people go to church on Sundays but don't live it throughout the week. She had made up her mind that if she was going to do this Christian thing, she either wanted to be real about it or not do it at all. No faking it. She's also extremely intelligent. She knows almost every Bible story and knows more about religion, politics, and science than any person I know. The more she read stories and saw how people were supposed to love God and supposed to act, the more she saw fakeness around her. Atheists and non-Christians were always more welcoming and kind to her than any church we attended. With time, she started to become distant from her faith. That led her to researching evolution, why God can't exist, and everything else you can imagine. She started to become so immersed in questioning God that she began to doubt everything she'd always believed. All of that might not have been enough to push my mom over the edge into not believing. However, another horrible experience was the last straw. In our small town, there was a kid who was 5 years older than me named Trip. He always hung out around me and my friends at the baseball and soccer fields. He also showed up for every youth event at our church and volunteered for vacation Bible school. But my dad always got a bad vibe from him. There was something about him that put my dad on edge. Other people got the same vibe, but since Trip came from a broken home, most people felt sorry for him and didn't say a thing about him hanging around kids who were 5, even 10 years younger than him. Everybody in our small town knew Trip. He went to sleepovers younger kids had, but not at our house. My dad always kept him a safe distance from us, even though my mom didn't always see it. I believe my dad had discernment that came only from God, because one day when I was 13, Trip pulled me aside at the end of an American Cancer Society fundraiser called Relay for Life. All my friends had left, so it was just him and me while I waited for my dad to come pick me up. Trip asked me if I had hit puberty yet. That seemed like a very odd question. Then he asked me some other very uncomfortable questions a 19-year-old should never ask a 13-year-old. My dad arrived pretty quickly after that. On the ride home, I told him what Trip had said to me. My dad immediately called Trip's dad and spoke to Trip himself. Something was not right. My dad knew it. He wondered what else this boy might have done. My father then called the police. A full investigation went down in our small town. After a few weeks, many kids we knew came out about how Trip had sexually molested them. Before my dad called the police, they had been too afraid to say anything. Trip was convicted on multiple counts and was sentenced to prison for more than 60 years. This episode threw my mom, my family, even our entire town into a spin. How could this boy, whom our church trusted, do this? We moved on to more churches over the next few years. In what should have been safe places, we encountered a few pastors who had acted out with some disgusting sexual behaviors. Some towards young boys, men who claimed to follow Jesus, but had behaved in ways that proved otherwise. This was the final straw for my mom. She was done. For her, there just seemed to be too much hurt and wrong in the world for a loving God to exist and allow it all to happen. Everyone struggles with this question. My mom decided the answer had to be that a loving God does not exist. My mom is the best mother on planet Earth, but finding out about her decision was definitely tough for my family and me. My spiritual life changed early in my high school years. Before then, I went along with going to church and probably called myself a Christian, but God was always just kind of there. I believed he was real, and I could tell you a lot of stories that are in the Bible, but I cannot say I loved God. Not really. I did not have a passion for him. I did not long to know him more, and I did not want to live for him. Like anyone else in the churches I attended, I went along with the whole God thing and did what was expected of me, and that was the end of it. Thankfully, in my early high school years, I got plugged into a great church youth ministry that first got my attention with their really dynamic worship music. people around me weren't just going through the motions and singing songs from a book. The songs made me feel like I was actually in the presence of God, which I later learned we were. Psalm 22:3 says that God is enthroned in the praises of his people. This was something I'd never experienced before, and it made me hungry for more of God. I wanted to worship him. I wanted to get closer to him. Our youth pastor taught me that I can love Jesus while being myself. Through this youth group, I discovered that I could smile and laugh and be goofy and still follow Jesus. In fact, following Jesus brought out more joy in me, and following Jesus is what I wanted to do. I'd seen the fake Christians and the abuse by those who claim to follow God. At some point in our lives, we all doubt God. Sometimes we doubt if he is really good or faithful or all he says he is, and sometimes we doubt his existence. I was out to see if this God was real, and if he was who the Bible says he was. My life would change and be better as a result of following him. He's the only person to have ever conquered death, so, of course, his ways would be better than mine or anyone else's. After surrendering my all to God, I quickly experienced his peace and joy, a peace and a joy that nothing else can bring me. It didn't make sense, but I felt content knowing he is in control and that he is who he says he is, even if some who claim to know him and follow him aren't. Thankfully, by this point in my life, I hadn't gotten involved in the kinds of bad choices that send kids my age down a long road. I didn't drink or do drugs, and I wasn't going out and sleeping around. Because I hadn't done anything that was really bad, or had one of those really cool and deep come-to-Jesus moments, I always thought my story of coming to Jesus was pretty boring. I still had a lot of sin in my life, however, that I had to turn over to God. We all do. Some sin is just more visible than others. God still deals with me about stuff today. I want him to. I want to get closer to him. I don't do it because one of my parents or pastors or even a church told me to, but because I can feel God's goodness and comfort in my life. When I'm closest to God, joy and peace overwhelm me. When I forget to spend time with God and let the world consume me, I become more easily agitated, angry, and less joyful. After I committed my life to Jesus, I made some very big decisions. One of the biggest, at least in my mind, was to wait until after I got married to have sex. To me, this wasn't a negative decision. It wasn't so much that I was not going to have sex. Instead, I believed that God had an amazing girl out there for me, and the two of us were going to share our lives together. And it wasn't just that he had someone he'd chosen specifically for me, and me for her, and we were going to get married. This was someone I was going to make a lifetime of memories with. That's what I looked forward to. Finding the one with whom I was going to share amazing life adventures that we talk about for the rest of our lives. That's why I didn't really date anyone through high school or my first year of college. I didn't want to have all these great experiences with a girl, only to break up and be left with memories that I could not share with my future wife. Because no one wants to hear stories about what you did with your ex. The Bible says that sex is an awesome gift God gives a husband and a wife to share together. Sex was the ultimate experience I wanted to share only with the one God had chosen for me. Don't get me wrong, I was no different than any other teenage guy. I wanted to have sex. I thought about it all the time. Remaining a virgin wasn't some stroll through the meadows. I struggled, and when I say I struggled, I mean it was probably the hardest thing I'd ever done. Two small things helped me big in my walk for purity. First, I paid really close attention to the small decisions I made every day. By that, I mean I did not put myself in situations where I knew the temptation was stronger than me. That's why I didn't date and didn't drink. If I had put myself in a situation alone with a girl, with no accountability from my friends, and we started drinking, well, you get the picture. I'm not saying dating is wrong or even drinking if you are of legal age. I just knew myself and my struggles and had to be honest with myself if I truly wanted to wait until marriage. Accountability was the second small thing that helped me in a big way. I shared my life with some good friends who had the same morals. With my good friends, at my house or in a safe environment, we didn't let each other slip up. I'm sure you hear this all the time, but surrounding yourself with good friends is one of the most important things you can do. In the early years, after deciding I wanted to wait until marriage to have sex, I was pretty judgmental about it. I was also dead set on what I expected from my future wife. I figured that since I waited, so should she. Never did I think I'd date or be attracted to someone who hadn't saved herself for our wedding night. Waiting to have sex was difficult and something I'd hoped my future wife would greatly appreciate. I hoped that she was giving the same effort to waiting that I was. However, as I got older and matured a bit, I realized how difficult and rare it was to wait. Some of my friends started caving. I also made new friends in college who had struggled in the past. I saw how strong and tempting the draw towards sexual things can be. Not just the act of sex, but also inappropriate images and thoughts. It's so easy to give in a little here and a little there, and then, before you know it, you've gone farther than you would have ever expected. I had been in a few situations where if I had not cut the time short, I may not have waited. As I matured in my faith, I realized that my heart wasn't in line with God's heart. He didn't look at me and think I was any better for waiting than someone who hadn't waited at all. He loved us both deeply and equally. He forgives us of all wrongs and redeems any and all situations. God showed me that he wasn't this all-controlling ruler with this guidebook called the Bible and that we have to follow these rules in order to get into heaven and gain his love. Rather, God has been around forever. He knows sin exists and has seen humans generation after generation fall into this trap of believing our ways are higher and greater than his, that there are no consequences. But just because we want to think something is true, because it sounds nice, doesn't mean that's the case. God wants us to wait until marriage because he knows that not waiting can result in so much pain, sorrow, guilt, and shame, all of which could have been avoided. And God loves us so much that it hurts him to see us choose any sin over him. I also started to realize that remaining a virgin until my wedding night wasn't the real goal. The Bible doesn't say, remain a virgin until marriage. Instead, it calls us to purity. Biblical purity means trusting and obeying God. Purity is about trusting that God's ways are higher than our ways, even if we don't like it or understand. When I stopped focusing on not having sex and instead pursued purity, I realized that I could technically be a virgin and not be sexually pure. Jesus said that if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, that's the same as sleeping with her. By that standard, I was definitely not pure. I had to get my heart right with God and make the decision to pursue purity daily. It wasn't easy. I failed daily, but God took my struggle and pursuit and turned it from something that made me feel ashamed into something beautiful. I had to grow a lot in my walk with God before I came to this understanding. I wish it hadn't taken me so long. My biggest regret is that I wish I had focused less on being a virgin and instead focused more on Jesus every single day. He has greater plans for our lives than simply, don't do bad things. Rather, God wants us to live life and live it abundantly. He doesn't want us to be bored losers. He just knows what's best for us. With that being said, I am extremely happy I did wait. And after Savannah and I met, we both waited together. I know God has blessed our marriage in a powerful way because of it. I write all of this so that you will understand that never in my wildest dreams did I think the woman I met at the Grove with her child was the girl that God had in store for me. For one thing, I assumed Savannah was already married. That's how small town Alabama I was. When I texted her that first night, I made sure my texts were all very proper and formal. I think I even called her ma'am, which is what a polite southern boy calls a married woman. Even if I had known Savannah was single, I never would have thought about trying to date someone who lived more than 2,000 miles away from me. Sure, I went out shopping for a motor scooter without a plan on how to get it home, but that's why there's FedEx and UPS. Shipping a scooter across the country is a one-time thing. Trying to have a girlfriend who lives 2,200 miles away? That would have seemed impossible if I'd given it any thought whatsoever. It's a good thing I hadn't.
Chapter 5, Huntington Beach. Cole's first text to me made me laugh. I wish I'd saved it. It was hilarious. He wrote it like an English assignment. He even called me ma'am, as if he was talking to some boring mom. I wondered how old he thought I was. He almost seemed nervous about texting me, even though I had asked Michelle to give him my number so we could work out the details for VidCon. Cole was formal with me, but I was just myself when I texted him back. I used emojis and abbreviations and wrote texts like I was talking to a friend. Cole and I had texted back and forth a little bit when I had an idea. I texted something like, "Hey, I know you guys are going to beaches in the area tomorrow. If one of your stops is in Huntington, let me know because we're going to be there and we can hang out." "We" was my sister and me. "Sure, 100%. We have nothing to do tomorrow night. If we end up down there, I will let you know," Cole texted me back. That's how we left it. Maybe he'd show up. Maybe he wouldn't, but somehow I hoped he would. Something inside of me wanted to spend some time with him and get to know him better. Maybe it was the way he interacted with Everly. Maybe it was because I could tell right off that Cole and John Steven were good guys, and there hadn't been too many good guys in my life. Not in a long time. Hanging out with a couple of them seemed like a good idea. The next day, Cole texted me to tell me that they could meet us in Huntington Beach. I was like, "Great," and told him to meet us at Wahoo's Fish Taco. The food there is good, and it is close to the beach, which made it the perfect place to meet. Since Ev and I lived with my mom, it was really easy finding a babysitter so I could go out. My mom loved to have Ev all to herself. She was always telling me to go do something with my friends, so when I told her Chantel and I were going to go hang out with a couple of friends, she nearly pushed me out the door. Ev didn't mind either. She loves her Gigi time. Cole still seemed a little unsure of himself around me when he and John Steven first arrived. The four of us sat down at a table and made awkward small talk until the waitress came to take our order. Wahoo's is known for its fish tacos. It has all kinds of stuff on the menu, but all four of us ordered the exact same thing, chicken quesadillas. That lightened things up. We all started laughing about how we'd all ordered the same thing. That didn't last too long, however. Once we were through talking about chicken quesadillas, there wasn't a lot more to talk about. It wasn't like this was a date for anyone. My sister had a serious boyfriend, and John Steven was thinking about proposing to his girlfriend. That left Cole and me as the only unattached ones, though we didn't know that at the time. By the time the food arrived, I was feeling awkward. I think we all were. But then John Steven said we should go around the table and see who can take the funniest and weirdest bite out of their quesadilla. Cole laughed and said he was in. I looked at my sister and we both said okay. John Steven made the ridiculous face that made me laugh, and he took a very strange bite out of his quesadilla that was hilarious. Then Cole took a silly bite out of his while making a grunting sound. Then my sister took a crazy bite. Then it was my turn. I opened wide and took a crazy bite. The guys laughed. It might have been a sympathy laugh, but somehow I felt good. Inside I was like, "Whoa, I'm being goofy again. And I don't feel awkward or embarrassed. And I'm not questioning myself." It had been a long time since I'd been silly and felt good about it. Cole and John Steven made my sister and me laugh a lot at Wahoo's. I relaxed and just had fun. They weren't like other guys I had been around. For one thing, they didn't curse, and they didn't check out every girl who walked in. That was a pleasant change. Even though they were both goofy, they weren't flirting or trying to score any points on us. To me, it felt like they were just being themselves. They even talked about God, but not in a forced or preachy way. And they prayed when we got our food, before we all did our crazy bites, and their prayer was natural, like they were talking to a friend. After we ate, the four of us went over to the beach and started walking around. Cole and John Steven didn't play it cool. They walked up to random people and asked them crazy questions, or they did crazy walks and silly stunts that made me crack up laughing. The more I laughed, the more things they did. Every so often, Cole said to us, "Sorry, guys, I know we're super weird. If it ever gets to be too much, don't be afraid to ditch us." Chantel and I just laughed. "No," I said. "We love it. You guys are hilarious." My sister and I even got in on the fun. We'd walk up to people, tap them on the shoulder, and scoot away before they could see who'd tap them. Sure, it was silly, but it made the guys laugh. The sun went down and the beach life slowed down. I expected Cole and John Steven to go back to where they were staying. Instead, Cole asked if there were any haunted or scary places like an old cemetery or abandoned building nearby where we could go explore. Apparently, exploring scary places is something they did for entertainment in the small town where